You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Continuing now with our series, Minding Michigan, focusing on mental health questions in our state. Today, we dig into just what we really mean when we talk about mental health and mental illness. We use those terms so often, but do we really know what we're talking about? Here with us is Michigan State University psychiatrist, Dr. Farha Abbasi. Dr. Abbasi, welcome back to Stateside.
Thank you.
When you hear these terms, mental health or mental illness, what do they mean to you?
I think it's so important for all of us to focus on what is mental health versus what is mental illness. So like any other medical field, psychiatry has also entered the realm of preventive. So we are also focusing on how do you promote being mentally healthy. As a society, all our focus is on improving physical health. You exercise, you eat healthy, you have schedules to promote that. But I want to bring the focus on mental health, which is the same way you need to take care of your mind. You need to be careful with your sleep. You have to eat healthy and still exercise and maybe add meditation to it so that you have a healthy, strong mind. But what we mean by that is when we say you are mentally healthy, it means you are living up to all your commitments. You are enjoying life. You are having a productive life. You have the ability to adapt to change, and you have the ability to cope with adversity.
Not being able to achieve any of those, does that constitute mental illness, or do you view mental illness in a different way?
Mental illnesses also fall on a spectrum. Like, you know, with physical health, you might have a flu, you might suffer from a viral condition, you might have something stronger, like some infectious disease, or you might have cancer. Same way, mental illnesses fall on a spectrum. So you could be stressed because of a temporary situation at work, in your family life, death of a loved one. That can be very situational stressors that do make you depressed or anxious, but then that's a self-limiting kind of disease that improves with time and with help. But then there are conditions like generalized anxiety disorder that people constantly have to learn to cope with. And then there are depression and serious issues like bipolarity, or even serious like malignant level would be schizophrenia. Mm-hmm. But the good news with mental illnesses right now is that the early detection and starting on treatment has shown us really positive results. And even people with schizophrenia are now living very productive lives.
But it's interesting, Dr. Abbasi, there's such a stigma attached to that word mental. Why is that? Does that stigma prevent people from getting that early help and seeking aid?
Mental simply means something to do with your mind. The word in itself has no connotation of you being functionally impaired. Even if you have mental illness, it doesn't mean you are not capable or you are inadequate, or you are not sufficient, or you don't matter. You can still have a very productive, functioning life. You can have a very satisfactory career. Your relationships can improve. But yes, some stages you need more treatment. You need some intervention. So we need to look at mental illnesses in biopsychosocial model like any other disease, that there is a genetic vulnerability, that social stresses play a role, and underlying health plays a very important role as well. We need to put it in a disease model, like why are you not ashamed or feel bad talking about your diabetes? Then why should you have any reservation talking about your depression?
And yet it is still there, which is why we're doing this, so we can kind of shed some light on this. Let's go a little deeper, Dr. Abbasi. What are some of the things that we do that most impact our mental health, for better or for worse?
Your sleep. We have become a sleep-deprived nation. I work in a campus setting. I see, look at an average student. They are up till 2, 3 in the morning and then try and catch up that sleep during day hours. A common trend is that the earliest class they would take would be around noon or 1 p.m. What we are not realizing is that even if you sleep for, let's say, 4 or 5 hours during the day, it's not the quality deep sleep that you require to consolidate your memory, to improve your focus and concentration. what happens is when you are sleep deprived for a long time, it's almost like having an illegal alcohol level. It does impact your decision making. It releases high level of cortisol in your body, which is our stress hormone. The more cortisol is released in your body, more anxious you will feel. That's one thing we really need to improve on.
And when we hear the idea of sleep, I know we all hear it, but I don't know if we really get it. Turn off the screens, the TV. You've got to have good sleep hygiene habits, don't you?
Absolutely. That's where we start this conversation, is establishing good sleep hygiene. You take care of your body by eating healthy. That has a strong impact on your mind. Exercise has a strong impact on your mind. It releases natural endorphins in your body, gives you strength to cope with stresses better. Again, if I look at an average student, multitasking and how many stimuli they're always receiving. If you see them doing their homework, the TV is on, they have headphones on, constantly they're texting. You are constantly putting your mind under stress. So we need to have a relaxation time built in our schedule.
And I dare say, we're not just talking students. You know, go up the generations. That's a habit we're all kind of in, isn't it?
Absolutely. The kids would learn what your parents and elders are doing. When I was raising my kids, my mom told me, don't tell them to do something, show them how to do it. So you have to practice it before you can preach it.
You're saying really all of us need to dial it back.
We need to build in time for mindfulness, meditation, spirituality, religion, all that we now know have very strong healing power.
Dr. Bussey, what about our basic mindset, the way that we build our expectations or set goals for ourselves?
When we talk about how to improve our mental health, there are three major things that play a very important role. The power of positive thinking. The other is self-esteem, believing in yourself. Third is resiliency, that ability to cope with changes, trauma, and stress. So there are a few things that you can incorporate in that, setting realistic goals, acceptance of your situation. When we look at people who are doing well, it's not that they haven't faced struggles in their life. It's just they have learned to accept what the real situation is and learning to cope to the best of your ability. We should not avoid, but be ready to face challenges. Never isolate, because another thing is whenever we are stressed, we are depressed, we tend to isolate, break our communication skills. There is such a strong literature supporting the importance of social interactions, social relationships. Maybe it's family, maybe it's friend, maybe it's your pet, maybe it's connecting to other groups. It's very important that we keep the communication channels open.
I think I hear you say that it is also really important that we're not looking outside for validation.
Absolutely. As a society, we are set up on basis of external validation. I'm not a good student till my professors tell me I'm a good student, or my GPA reflects that I'm a good student. We are always seeking that external validation, be it from my parents, our kids, our colleagues, or our relationships. And in fact, what we now know is that the self-esteem depends on your internal validation, not thinking that you are the best. That would be grandiosity, right? But to be very realistic, knowing what your strengths are and what your limitations are. Using your strengths to augment your work and using your limitations to improve on what you can achieve.
Dr. Bussey, do you see differences, especially looking at this idea of how we view the world and how we validate ourselves? Is there a difference between the generations?
I think older generation had to face a lot of guilt and a lot of negative validation. But what's happening right now is I feel like it has been a trickling effect. Even from going to self-love, it's instead gone to some kind of apathy, like I don't care. That does not necessarily translate to self-care. You need to care for yourself, and you need to care for people around you. You need to care for your family. The connections have to be maintained to maintain a society. But one thing I do see is we also have to realistically realize that every generation has its own unique problems, and that this generation does not have it easy, because this generation has faced wars, This generation has seen the economical meltdown. This generation is being told that just an undergrad degree is not enough, that there won't be jobs for you, and even you might not have social security when you retire. So this generation is in an extreme stress. So as an older generation, we need to acknowledge that, and we need to provide unconditional support and help to our younger generation.
Dr. Abbasi, if you could get all of us listening to you right now to adopt three behaviors or habits that could have a really positive effect on our mental health, what would those be?
First, with positive thinking. Let me explain it in terms for my students. I always tell them that failing does not mean failure. So even if you have failed one exam or if one relationship breaks, it does not mean the end of the world. You need to understand that this too shall pass. So one thing is positive thinking. Other is building up your self-esteem, knowing yourself, accepting yourself, loving yourself. And the third thing is self-care, taking care of your mind and body. There is no dichotomy. If you are suffering from physical ailment, then 86% chances that there is an underlying depression and anxiety. If you are suffering from depression and anxiety, there is a high chance that you will have physical ailments too. If you look at the five important major diseases right now, COPD, heart attack, diabetes, hypertension, they all have a very strong stress component related to it. Learning to cope with stress is important. So the two things that I've learned with really people who are very happy and successful, one is gratitude, appreciating what you have, and the other is volunteering, going beyond your own suffering, stress, and pain, and to reach out to someone else in pain. That has an immense positive impact on your mind and your health.
Great advice from Dr. Farha Abbasi, who's an assistant professor of psychiatry at Michigan State University. Dr. Abbasi, thank you for being part of Minding Michigan today.
Thank you so much.